please remember that the Lucy Pod is not a replacement for professional medical advice. If you have questions or concerns about your own amazing brain, please speak to a medical professional. I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which I speak to you all today, the peoples of the Kulin Nation. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Alrighty. Hello everyone and welcome back to the Lucy Pod. I hope that you are all well and are staying safe. Today I have a guest joining me to talk about things all ADHD. Please welcome Taryn. Hi Taryn, how are you?
I'm well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
No worries. So tell us about yourself, plug your Instagram, tell us about who you are, what you do, and your interests.
Sure. Asking an ADHDer about their interests, that is humorous to me because they're all over the place.
There's a lot.
Yes, there's so many. So I am Taryn Dickey. I am an ADHD coach, and I primarily work with women entrepreneurs who have ADHD, likely just like myself, diagnosed later in life, as that tends to happen, not always, but often for women. And yeah, I used to be a school counselor. I did that for a number of years before I had my two daughters who are 9 and 12. I don't know how that happened. And yeah, just I'm really passionate about helping people work with their ADHD and not so much fight against it, because there are some really hard things about it.
Yes.
But there's also some really great things too. And so recognizing those wonderful pieces and then also how we can kind of play around with those more challenging things is one of my favorite things to do with folks. So interests, oh my goodness. Let's see, I love to read. I don't know if you can tell, I have some books. I also do pottery, I dabble.
That's so cool.
I know, right? So that's kind of new. I started crocheting.
Aww. I have that here too. I like. So you're good with your hands. You're the ADHD who's good with their hands. I've got no motor skills. So I'd love to crochet. I'd love to do pottery, but I
honestly, I will say with the pottery, for my ADHD in particular, it's like I'm able to shut my brain off for the time that I'm doing it, which other than meds, I don't think I've ever experienced
having amazing.
That shut off. So that's been a wonderful thing. I like to hang out with friends. I like to work out. I like to be at the beach. I mean, I feel like I probably left out an important component of who
They'll
I am.
Come up. They'll come
it
up.
It will come up. That's true.
It'll come up. So thank you for sharing. So a new thing I do, well, a thing that I now do with guests is I ask them three questions before we get into like the nitty gritty. So the first one is when were you diagnosed with ADHD?
I was diagnosed about 6 or 7 years ago. I was in my mid 30s. That is when I was diagnosed.
Okay. Second one is what are your current hyperfixations/special interests? Which you kind of already went into your interests, but is there like a one that's a hyperfixation or a special interest?
That's so funny. You know, if you had not asked me that, I probably could have rambled off a million things. because it's like the specific question. My current, I guess it's a hyperfixation is threads, which is where we connected.
Yes.
Actually.
Yes.
I don't think I've been this excited about a social media platform in a long time.
Yeah.
It's
amazing.
It is amazing. And I'm connecting with some really cool humans and I find myself excited for it. You know,
it's
new. There's that novelty we're seeking.
Yes.
It's a little bit of that dopamine, all of that.
Oh yeah. Hell yeah. Absolutely.
And also it's a space that currently feels good.
Yes.
Whereas
it has good vibes. It actually has good vibes. I haven't seen any issue. And like I touch wood, it doesn't have like no one's fighting. No one's arguing.
I mean, like when, and when I see it, there have been so many times where I'm like, wow, what a wonderful exchange that was. Like, it's just so different.
It's so sensible. Like, it's so
what
sensible.
A great
like,
word.
There's nothing wrong with disagreeing. Like, I've had a few disagreements where people are like, oh, I don't really agree with what you've said about this part of ADHD, but it hasn't gone to the gutter. Like, it's.
Yes.
Like, you can just say, I don't like that thing that you said, and here's why. And I would say, yep, cool. I don't agree with you. And then we're friends. Yeah. It's really... Yeah.
It's wonderful.
It's so
wonderful
nice.
It's space, and I love
it. It's beautiful. It's like this little corner that a lot of people don't really care about because it's not Twitter, it's not TikTok, but I'm okay with it being that
Same.
Little corner. I'm really okay with it not taking off and being this huge thing. I'm really okay with that. Yeah. I love threads. Yeah. I'm with you on that. I'm with you. And it's where we met. So it's special now. It's even more special.
Really?
The third and final question I have is, what is an ADHD trait that you feel is unique to you? Like that not many ADHDs have that you've noticed that it's something about your personality combined with the ADHD?
I love this question. I love this so much. It's funny. When you ask that question, I start thinking of, oh, yes, this. And then I'm like, no, that's an actual trait that a lot of people share. So to come up with something unique is hard for me. I also think when you said that question, I can't tell you how many times I've seen somebody post something. I feel like you know where I'm going with this. I mean, I like see your face, but you know, somebody will post something and be, you know, and it sounds so like different or like nobody else could possibly think this, or feel this way. And it's like, no, nope. I'm with you. And apparently hundreds of other people are as well. And so while I can't think of anything right now, I do think if it comes up in conversation or if something happens, I think there's going to be a lot of head nods because when we finally say the thing, you know, it's like people are like, yes.
I get it. Like totally nothing feels unique anymore.
It's like,
true.
I like to think I'm so unique and so wonderful.
Same.
And there's nobody else like me. Sure.
Everyone had the same childhood. Everyone did the same thing as a kid. Like when you would do it as a kid, you're like, no one else does this thing. And all the unknown viewers of my life have no idea. And I'm this weirdo. And then
ever had this thought ever in their in existence.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden it's like, there.
Yeah.
You know?
And you're like, so I'm just not special anymore. Great.
Yeah. So I'm so special, but I'm totally.
But you're not. I'm kidding. You're all special. Everyone's special in there, in their own way. Well, thank you for answering those questions. Now, you said you got diagnosed, was it 6 or 7 years ago?
Yes.
So,
you know, memory gets a little foggy with us. So I feel like I was 35 and I'm
45.
42 now. So, yeah.
Okay. So that would be considered that's a late diagnosis. Yeah. Like that's super late. Some people are like, no. I'm fine with that. I'm like, okay, fair enough. But I would say that is a late diagnosis. How did that impact you? I hear a lot of ADHDers either say it was great, I got answers, or they say it was great, I got answers, but such an immense feeling of grief of what could have been, what I could have done, and anger at people who didn't know. So what was that like?
Wow. Exactly what you said. There was a lot of relief, for sure. You know, it's kind of like, oh, that explains it, you know, and having that as a reason for why I struggled in so many different ways and in so many different areas, there was relief, but there was also a lot of grief. And exactly what you said, anger, frustration, the would-haves, should-haves, could-haves, all of that come up. And there is so much unpacking and unlearning that had to happen. I mean, that's still happening,
of course.
7-ish years later. But there was a lot of tears, a lot of,
course.
my therapist, God bless her, like, you know, there's just a lot of processing.
Yeah.
Because life had been hard.
Yeah.
And I didn't know why. I thought it was, you know, I thought there was something unique to me, just me.
Yes.
I thought it was like a character flaw.
Same. You know, yep. You're really made to feel that way when you're undiagnosed, because you're like, why can't I just do the thing that everyone else is doing? And I can imagine as an adult, it would feel even worse, because when I was undiagnosed, I was a kid. So I was like, I am different and I don't like this, but I'm a kid. I have time to figure it out. Whereas an adult, you'd be like, why can't I be like the other adults? Like, why am I so behind on this? It would just be so like frustrating. You'd feel like there's something wrong. I remember writing in my diary and saying, I think I have a like problem in my brain, which I do have a problem in my brain. It's ADHD, but I really thought it was like this illness. Like I remember saying like, I have a sickness in my brain because nothing's working. Like it doesn't make sense. So yeah, what prompted you to be diagnosed? What was it? Were things just getting too hard and you were like, I need to do something? Or
yeah, it was pretty that much. So, you know, I struggled pretty much the start of high school, maybe just like a little bit before then, in terms of, you know, academics, and things weren't as easy. And I started to come up against these challenges that I had never come up against before, but I managed. You know, there was a lot of like band-aid slapping or figuring things out, or you know,
making do with what you've got.
Yeah, you just figured it out. And I think for me, what ended up happening is I had kids, and I was also an entrepreneur, and doing that without a neurodivergent brain, I think is challenging in and of itself.
Yes.
So I recognized, you know, to your point, I'm looking around and okay, you know, it seems like some other folks are able to do this a whole lot
easier,
better, or easier, or simpler than I am. And what looks like three steps for them feels like 486 for me. And I'm like behind 500 plus, you know, like it's just, it was just feeling like I could never figure things out. I could never get ahead. I could never, you know, never mind business side of things. Like I couldn't do the dishes. I couldn't do the laundry. I couldn't do like the,
what you should be doing. Like what are your basic life skills? It's like everyone is taught, like do the dishes. Like you should remember.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'll just do them. Like you tell me to do them, and that means nothing. Yeah. You know. So
absolutely.
So it came to a head, and I had suspected for a while. You know, I said I was a school counselor. I'd worked with students forever, so I was so familiar with. You know, I wrote accommodation plans to assist these students.
Wow.
So I was so familiar with ADHD, how it presents. And when I look back, I'm like, oh my, of course, you know, it's like, duh. But when you're living it, you think there's something wrong with my brain, and nobody
it's like, there it. Is.
yeah. So yeah, it was just everything had come to a head. Overwhelm was like to the max.
Yeah.
And I thought I was like just completely losing my mind. So.
And it was time to do something. How was the diagnosis process? Because I know that in Australia it was pretty bad for a while, and it still is pretty difficult to get one. It's incredibly expensive. Like I think for some families, it costs them about $800 Australian to get a diagnosis, which is, people don't think that's a lot. That's an obscene amount of money. And I can't imagine if you had multiple kids you wanted to diagnose, you'd be like insane. So how was the diagnosis process for you? Because you're based in the States. So what's the system like there? I think really, we all have opinions, and I like to talk about the American healthcare system, but I would like to hear from an American.
That's a issue. Whole other episode.
Yes.
And I'm not qualified to talk about
No.
I personally had a generally positive experience.
That's so good.
I say that with like an immense load of privilege, and I like well resourced. We have great insurance. Not everybody does.
No.
And I, it was one of those things. I had a conversation with my primary care, and I just said, "This is what's going on, and this is like, what can we do?" And he sent me to a psychiatric nurse practitioner who I met with several times. We did, you know, some for we did all the, you know, rating scales. Yep. We did all the interviewing. We did all of it, and you know. It, almost instantly, she was like, mm-hmm, yep, totally.
Absolutely. Yeah, this.
yes, this is a very obvious case in front of me. So, it was a pretty relatively easy process.
That's good, though.
I spoke up.
Yes.
Doing that was hard initially and took some time. Fortunately, there weren't a lot of phone calls involved, so that made things a little bit easier because you know how much we love to make a phone call.
Yeah, I'm a different. Yeah. This is where I feel like I'm unique. No, I'm kidding. I love this.
So
I love a phone call. I'm really good with the phone. I actually am the queen of phones. Like my dad doesn't want to make a phone call, I'll ring for him. I love that. Killing a spider. I can't do that, but like I am that, but with phone calls. I've had to though because all my like big girl jobs have involved administration. Like I worked at a consulate, so have to be on the phones. Right. I work in, you know, politics, gotta be on the phone. So I love a phone call, but I know that it is an insurmountable task. Like my dad's like, I have to ring to order one item, and I'm like, Dad, that's easy. He goes, can you please do that for me? He's like, I have to dial the number, I have to find it, then I have to talk to them. I'm like, but for some people, it's like, I just can't. And imagine you're trying to get diagnosed and you have to do all these phone calls. It feels counterintuitive.
There's so many like little teeny tiny tasks that are like unknown and unseen.
Absolutely.
And they just like crop up. So, but anyway, but my process was actually pretty.
That's good.
Pretty simple.
That's good.
Thankfully.
Yeah. No, that's a good thing. We want to hear that. We don't want to hear it when it's hard. I mean, we want to hear it because it's important, but like,
but
I'm happy for you.
We want to know. This is my unique experience. but I do think that my experience is actually more or less common than what most
people. Oh, yeah. Even mine. I have two teacher parents. They noticed something was going on. I got diagnosed when I was 13, and obviously I didn't have to pay for anything. They were able to. I was, you know, able to be medicated, whereas I'm now meeting so many friends and people who are my age who are, like, going through the diagnosis process, and it's just completely different. It's hard. It's very, very hard. We're really, really lucky. It's really lucky and just privileged to, be able to access it because it's just really expensive. Same with, like, medication. How was that accessing it? Did you get it immediately once you were diagnosed? I did
have some luck getting it immediately when I was diagnosed, and the only time I haven't been on it has been more recent, since October, because there was a shortage. I don't know if this was like globally or if it was
there was a shortage here. It was with, I can't remember which medication, but there has been a shortage.
And so
yes.
I haven't had it since October. And so that's been interesting.
Oh my God. So you don't have your meds.
So that's been really interesting. Yeah.
Is it all, do you hate it? Like, do you not? I think that would be horrible.
So some days I'm like, oh, I'm fine. This is great. And then other days I'm like, oh no, this is not how I want to live. So, it's been a back and forth. And this is like, all I probably need to do is to communicate with my nurse practitioner who usually fills the script, and just say, hey, could you call that in again and see if they have it? And I'll call for you.
I'll do it. After we get off, I'll call for you.
That would actually be really great.
I'll sort it out for you. I'll don't worry. We'll chat after. You have not been able to have your meds since October. That's horrible. That's awful. Yeah. I need my meds. And I say that and people look at me funny, non-ADHD, is like, you need them. They are so important
for our
health.
Yes.
They're healthcare. Absolutely. They're a form of healthcare, like an antidepressant. Yep. So that's...
Totally agree. Yeah.
What's the shortage? Can they work faster in the labs? Can they...
I'm not a chemist, but I just feel like it's like...
Surely.
You know, I don't know.
Surely. Like Walter White and Jesse were able to make their, you know, their stuff really quickly. Like they made a big batch. So I just,
yeah,
I feel like it's easier.
I have questions. Yeah.
You know, maybe we'll give them a call afterwards. I will call.
So I'm really good at writing letters.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Well, you,
it's like a nice little combo there.
So I'll do the calling and you'll do the letters. Perfect. If they don't answer your letter, I will call for you. So the next question I had for you is, what made you become an ADHD coach? Was it straight after your diagnosis, you're like, I'm going to do that, I want to do that, or did it come to fruition in another way? What brought you to becoming a coach?
Oh, yeah. So as I said, I was a school counselor, so I do have my master's in counseling.
Awesome.
So I have a lot of training in how to work with folks in the here and now, and also looking forward, like where we want to be, where do we want to go.
Mm-hmm.
When I had my first daughter, I found myself out of a job from where I had been working. And there really weren't a lot of school counseling positions in the area. And if there were, I was actually too expensive. People didn't want to hire me. And so it was really hard.
Because you were educated.
Because I was educated and I had all this experience. And so I was really struggling. And I found the online entrepreneurial world right around her first birthday. And I started out in a direct sales company. And so I began to mentor women who were also looking to build businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of organically, as I did that for a number of years and found success with that, whatever you want to, I don't even like saying that. The words that just came out of my mouth, I kind of want to vomit. But, you know, I had a good time with that.
Yes.
I was very lucky, blessed. Thank you. I started stepping into more mentorship, more coaching of women in particular. And what I began to notice, especially once I was diagnosed and once I shared that with, you know, the interwebs, that the women I was working with were also experiencing a lot of what I experienced. And I think you probably know that we're like a moth to a flame. We tend to find one another even when we're undiagnosed,
yes,
or, you know, self-diagnosed or have no idea diagnosed. We tend to find one another. And so it was, like I said, it was this very organic, oh, I'm already coaching these women who are exactly like me. And so I just one day, and I think it was like November of 2020.
Oh, wow.
When we're all here trying to just figure out our lives.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I'm already doing this. Like, this is what I want to officially be doing, you know, and be calling myself and presenting there to let folks know that that's what I want to do. Because for me, I think what happens to a lot of us, not everybody, but I think what happens is that we see all these messages of this is how you should run your business, or this is how you should be doing things for, you know, to be an entrepreneur.
Yes.
And it's coming from people who are neurotypical or
yes,
do not have,
of course,
our brains.
Mm-hmm.
And so we start to question ourselves when we can't, like we actually cannot do.
Well, they're giving strategies that are not designed for us.
They're not designed for our brains.
Yeah.
It might work for us for maybe a week, maybe a month, maybe a few months, maybe, but overall,
it's a struggle.
It's going to fall apart.
Yes.
And I think so many amazing humans, amazing creatives, innovators, just the most beautiful people in the entire world have not done the thing that they are meant to do simply because they were listening to the advice of somebody who truly just doesn't understand them.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think it like breaks my heart. And so I think that's why
you did the thing.
Yeah, I think that's why it means so much to me to be able to work with people in this this way.
It's important. I used to think it's so contradictory to be an ADHD coach, because my idea of an ADHD coach was like, you have to be organized, you have to be on the ball, which is hard for us. So I'm like, how the hell would you be a good ADHD coach if you've got not all these flaws, but all these issues? But speaking to other ADHD coaches, like I just did an episode, and speaking to you, it really does prove that it's actually not contradictory to be ADHD and to be an ADHD coach. It actually makes all the sense in the world. That's not to say that there aren't some good neurotypical ADHD coaches. I'm sure there are, but I do think it is, you're almost more qualified if you are ADHD, because you understand the person better. And obviously ADHD is a spectrum, and you're not going to, it's not a cure-all. I remember talking to an ADHD coach, name was Ron and Liz, and they were like, you are not there to cure you or fix you. We're there to be your thought partner. We are there to be with you and to work with you, not against the ADHD, and you have the answers. We don't tell people what to do, and you have the answers, and we just help you get there, which made me think of psychoanalysis, where, you know, you lie on the couch and you speak, and the psychoanalyst only interrupts you a little bit because he knows or they know that you have the answers and you just have to come to them, and you just need a bit more help. So it makes sense to be ADHD and an ADHD coach. It's not a contradiction. That's really awesome. So what sort of clients do you have? What sort of people do you see? Is it a mix of people, or do you focus on a specific group that you want to look after?
I mean, I'm open to working with anyone. I know that's like so not what you're supposed to say.
No, I think that's great. That's awesome. The other coaches I spoke to, they're like, I want everybody. If I could have everyone, I would have everybody. Yeah. So that's a good thing.
I say, like, I work with women entrepreneurs, ADHD, probably around my age, because that is who comes to me.
To you, yes.
Likely because they relate to me.
They see themselves in you and like us.
I think that naturally occurs. But I wouldn't say that's what I'm like seeking out.
Yes. You're not gatekeeping and it's just who comes to you.
And I've worked with women who are not entrepreneurs, and that's not even on their radar. No, thank you. Everybody's welcome.
Imagine if you'd come on and said, I don't want anyone.
An idea, and I want you to like see that through
and foster it.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Imagine if you came on and was like, I actually only have people who are just like pretty and like smart, and then that's it. And if you just don't meet the quota and the look,
sorry,
I'm just not interested. No.
Not for me.
Of course not. And so how do you organize yourself with being a coach? Because it's a business. It's a job. It's a thing. So how do you do it? Are you registered under like a company, or is it your own? Do you work from home? How do you do it? How do you manage it?
Yeah. So it's my company. It's an LLC, and woo! I work from home. Yes, nice. Thank you. But I work from home, and I use the simplest things because simple for me works. Anytime I try to make things more complicated, that's when people and things fall through the cracks. So, you know, my sessions are on Zoom. Everything is through my Kajabi. It's connected to my Google Calendar, which is how I live my life. Alarms all the time. And then I use like Google Drive to keep everything in folder.
One space. Yeah, in one space. Yep.
Spot. Yeah. And like I said, it's simple. I write my Instagram posts, I write in my notes app, and then I post things. I am not using boards or whatever. I don't even know what these things are called. Maybe it's my age shining through, but like I don't use that.
No, I can't. And all power to people who do, but
oh no,
I couldn't be bothered.
Brilliant, but like I know. I've tried a lot of things.
Yeah.
And this is what works for me.
Yes. Yes. I am. Yeah.
most important is finding the thing that works for you.
Absolutely. It's whatever. I always say that to people. It's whatever works. For me, it sounds like a nightmare. But for you, if it sounds like a dream, you do it. Like when people are like, I have a physical calendar and a pin board. No. That sounds like a sixth layer of hell to me. But you know what? It works for you. Godspeed. You do that. I'm a calendar girl and I'm an alarms girl. I want to know how many alarms you have set right now. How many alarms do you have? Because I've cleaned mine out, but I still have a lot.
So I'm pretty good at cleaning out. I'm also somebody who doesn't like notifications. So if I see even one little red circle anywhere,
it has to go.
I have BBs and I'm like, no, that needs to get out of here.
It needs to disappear. Now,
I only have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And the seventh was a reminder to hop on this call. Like I knew I wasn't going to forget,
but still,
just in case, you know, I have reminders to pick up my children from school every day.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
how you gotta live.
That's And you know what? It means that you won't traumatize them by forgetting to pick them up. Yeah. I always see those reels where it's
one time.
They won't remember. Kids don't remember. They'll be fine. You've got your alarm set. So how is ADHD, being an ADHD coach, how is that perceived in the States when you tell people that? Do they go, oh, so like what's your real job? Do they take you seriously? Is it popular? Is it respected? Is it supported?
To be honest, I don't know.
Like I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care. No, I mean, I care.
Yeah.
But I don't really know. So maybe this is my unique thing coming through. I don't leave space for people around me to have any judgment of what
unless
it is
it's
that
helpful.
I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah.
If I'm seeking it out, sure.
Yeah.
You know, but I have a really great support network of family and friends that every time I'm like, oh, I think we're going to do this. Oh, I think we're going to do that. Oh, I'm going to try this now. They just kind of roll with it. And I don't know if they've always rolled with it or if at some point I've said to them, you need to roll. You need to be on board here or like we're we just need to take some space, you know? And I have no idea if they've just always been this way because I have had so many ideas or so many career ideas. Like,
haven't we all? All the ADHD
just in this last year alone.
Ugh.
But the people around me really are just like, all right, Taryn, let's go. You got this. We're really proud of you, you know? So I think I just kind of take on that energy of ADHD coaching. Mm-hmm. And so when I say it to people, I get that same response as like, oh, I think I'm going to get my real estate license. Oh, I just got a death doula certification. Oh, I'm going to yoga teacher training. Like, and everybody is like, that sounds great.
That's great. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, how people feel about you who are saying rude things is none of your business. Like that's how I think. Like when people say to me, oh, you know, so-and-so said they really don't like this thing about you. And it's someone that's like not in my life. I'm like, why are you telling me this?
I don't need to know that.
Like, I don't care. Like they're not in my life and they're having to tell me like behind my back, there's a reason I'm walking out the door and they're receiving my back.
Right?
Like,
yeah,
I don't care. And you should surround yourself with people who respect you and respect the work that you're doing because it's good work. The next question I have is, so have you ever, because this came up in the last episode, have you ever forgotten to like hop on a Zoom and be with a client? Has a client forgotten? Like, how does it, because I know obviously it's not a contradiction to be an ADHD coach, but I'm sure there's moments where clients forget to show up or forget to do things. How do you manage that? Or has it not, it's not happened yet?
It has not happened.
Awesome. Great.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, and you know, maybe it has, and I just don't remember. And that could also be a thing. I know I have not missed a call, you know, like I have always shown up. I And I can't really think of a time. And if it was, it was like, I'm running late, or, oh my gosh, totally forgot. We'll be right on, you know, like one of those. And so to that point, like, I'm totally fine with that. Like, I get it. I understand. There's no like bad thoughts about it, or no like, oh, can't believe that person.
No. You know? Well, it would be so hypocritical. It's like they might be coming to you to get help with time management. Right. So
this is exactly the thing that is going to happen from time to time, and that's fine. But I think ADHD or not, is giving people grace has always worked for me.
Yeah, I think grace is important. I just don't think neurotypicals should ever be late. I was saying that on another podcast. That neurotypicals just don't have an excuse to be late. I have a real issue with people being late unless they're like ADHD or something, you know, an extenuating circumstances happen. Oh, I'm not talking about 5 minutes late. I'm talking about the neuros who you're like, we're meeting at, let's say, 5 o'clock, and I get there at 5, and I give you about till 5:15. And then if you haven't messaged me by 5:15 and you tell me, oh, I'm going to be late, when it's been like half an hour, 45 minutes, I'm done. I'm so annoyed. Yeah. And I don't think neurotypicals should have the right. Yeah. So no grace for them. No grace. Shame. No, I'm kidding. But I'm just like, what's your excuse? Like, what were you doing? Yeah. What's happened? Oh, I forgot. Well, not good enough. I came to this early. I got here at 4 o'clock. Right. I got here an hour early for you. So
it must be their executive function skill with time management just must not be that solid.
Must not be that good. Nope. Maybe they need a diagnosis. I don't know. The other question I had is, so is it that, so you've said that, you know, when you talk to people about being an ADHD coach, they kind of have positive reaction. You don't really have a space for people to make disparaging comments. What about when you talk about being ADHD? How is it perceived in the States? Because I feel like the only time I know what it's perceived like in the States is through social media, people making reels about it. But obviously social media isn't like the most accurate depiction of, you know, things. So how have you navigated being ADHD? Is it stigmatized? Is being medicated stigmatized? What's that like?
Yeah, you know, it's a real mixed bag here, I would say. I think the more conversations that are happening, I think, you know, social media has its flaws, but there are a lot of incredible things that can come from it as well, where people are beginning to understand more what ADHD is, what all types of disabilities and different, you know, things that people are living with. I think people are broadening their horizons in terms of understanding that people experience life differently, you know? Yeah. But I do think it's a very mixed bag here, that, you know, it is stigmatized, being on medication, especially, children being on medication. There's, you know, some people are like, no, that's wonderful. And other people have a lot of thought about it. And, you know, you might hear those, oh, everybody's a little ADHD, right? Or like, you don't have ADHD, you have a master's degree, or, you know, just like those types of things where I think it just boils down to, people do not know how to make sense of what it is that you're sharing with them. And they're uncomfortable. They don't know how to respond.
It's not necessarily malicious. It's more
I think it's a very small percentage of people who are being rude or mean. I think it's more just we don't know how to act around it yet. Or we're becoming better at understanding. You know, I think the younger generations are like, oh, yeah, I'm on my meds, or, oh, yeah, I have this or that. And
Gen Z. Oh, that's gosh. Me.
My favorite generation.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. I, like, I love Gen Z.
That's nice.
Which is great because like millennials apparently don't love Gen Z, but I do.
You do. Yeah, there's beef with the millennials and the Gen Zs. Like we think millennial, well, by we, I mean some Gen Zs, like they cringe. Like we're going to look back and be cringe. I mean, no,
I am. I'm totally cringe. Like it's not.
Yeah, but aren't we all? Aren't we all?
Right? I think like as more and more generations are very open about what it is that they're experiencing in life, I think there'll come a time where it's not stigmatized. There'll come a time where it's not misunderstood. There'll come a time where that's just this is human existence, right?
Mm.
At least I hope that.
I think, I think there's two types of, obviously there's not two types of people. People are very nuanced and the world is nuanced, but I think there's two types of people. I think there's people who are just genuinely curious and don't know about ADHD who are actually very well-meaning and who might ask questions that are like make your, you know, eye roll worthy, but that are genuinely like just don't know and who are just trying to be nice. And then there's the subset of people who think they're experts and who don't know anyone who's ADHD, are not ADHD themselves, and like to give decrees. Like they make blanket statements like putting your child on medication is a form of abuse. It's like, okay, do you have any? Well, I feel that way because it's wrong. And I read this one paper on Google and it said that. And you're like, you're just spreading misinformation. You're just talking absolute nonsense. You're not even a doctor, you know?
I don't listen.
No.
People are weird is what I've decided.
People are very strange. And not weird in our way, weird in their own.
No, not like a fun weird. Like just like
in a weird, creepy. I say creepy now. Whenever. Creepy. Like whenever someone does something strange, I'm like, that's really creepy. Not like weird fun. It's like, you're creepy. You're really like a strange human.
I'm taking that on.
Yeah, creepy. Like I was saying that last night to my boyfriend. I was like, it's just creepy. And he goes, it's not. I'm like, it is creepy. He goes, you mean weird? I'm like, no, creepy. Creepy. Because weird is good. Creepy is not. It's strange. Yeah. The other question I had, so you said you have two kids, which is awesome. I want children. I have such bad baby fever. I want so many children. I'm 23, so I need to wait. What's that been like being an ADHD parent? Because I'm sure it could be hard at times because kids can be unregulated. And then if you're unregulated or dysregulated, it's like – annoying. Like I even see my dad when we're both haven't taken our meds. It's like, this is annoying. Like you are getting on my nerves. I love you, but this is, we need to take some time apart. What is that like?
It is.
Well, parenting's hard anyway.
It's a journey. Okay. it is so hard. It is so hard. Yeah. Parenting is hard, period.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there are times where being ADHD makes it all the more hard. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that hard is how much I beat myself up for the things that I did or didn't do that I know are a result. Like I said, this is an ongoing unpacking, unlearning, ongoing grief, ongoing relief, ongoing because it's not just me that's being impacted now. It's two other humans who didn't ask to be here. And I've and I know a lot of folks will say, oh, but you're doing your best, and oh, they probably have a wonderful mother, and oh, they're,
which is true, but
all true. But it's hard. Like even just this week, there were a couple of things, like it's Teacher Appreciation Week here in the States, and so
that's nice. I wish we had that here.
And the kids were supposed to bring in flowers for their teachers, and I forgot, and so they're everybody else had brought stuff, and you know, and so it's just like those little things are like, today I forgot to send one of the kids to school with a jacket and they were like cold at recess. And you know, it's just like those little teeny or I picked out the wrong flavor of something that my little one loves to have. And how did I mess that up? It's obviously right there on the package. Like, but I don't pay attention to details. I saw a color and it looked like, you know, it's those little things that's just this week, you know? And most folks will say, oh, you know, give yourself a break. And I will. I'll get there. I will give myself a break.
Yeah. But I'm not going to pile on and say, yeah, I agree with those people, but I know.
You know, and I'll do the unshaming work when I have the time.
Yes. Yes. But
right now it's like that compounds over time when you have those little moments that, you know, like I fell short. And again, that's me. That is me just still saying on repeat those narratives about myself that I learned from the outside, from other people. But yeah, it's tough.
I love it. But two things can be true at once. That's the, like, whenever I talk to anyone who's a parent, they're like, they'll say all these, not bad, but like all the bad things, because there are bad things about parenting. Like, my kid shits me. And then they say, oh, and I just want to have another one and I would do it all over again. I'm like, what do you mean? But like,
I know we're walking contradictions at times.
No, but it's true. I will say one thing, as you know, a child who have had wonderful parents who will say to me sometimes, when we did that thing, when we yelled at you, did it upset you? I will say one thing. These things that parents feel bad about, specifically ADHD parents, trust, your child will not remember them. We will be okay. Like, you have not, parents have not, you've not damaged us by missing out on those things. We will live. And you know what? Your child will always have something to say about you in therapy. Even if you've been an amazing parent, it's really true. And I don't mean good content therapy in terms of like, there are parents who are really horrible, but my dad always says to me, I said to my dad, you're a great dad. And he goes, yeah, no, but I'm sure if you know, you go to therapy, you'll have a few things to say. And that's okay. I just don't want it to be the whole bulk of reason why you're going, and it's okay. Well, my mom. Yeah. And my mom, who's neurotypical, even says, you know, there was a time when I yelled at you, I did this thing, and did it upset you? I'm like, I don't remember. Like, I actually do not remember. I remember we went and got fries afterwards, and she's like, okay.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
Okay, great. Because I was beating myself up. So I get what you mean, but it's...
I know.
But parenting is, I can imagine, it is hard. And already, I think even neurotypical parents would feel the same way if they missed it. Sure. Like, so it's like a compounded thing of like, I forgot to give my kid lunch. A lot of parents do that, neurotypical or not. They forget to pick up their kids.
Yeah.
They forget their kids' birthdays, and they're neurotypical. Yeah. So I
know.
They will be okay. I have a feeling they will be fine. I turned out great. So my parents forgot to do things. So it is okay. The other question I had for you is, what was it like growing up undiagnosed? Because you kind of touched on it a little, that things were difficult, but what was that like in school? Were there accommodations? Was that a thing? Because you've kind of, you've worked in it. You used to write accommodation letters for students. So what was it like being undiagnosed as a kid and like young adult and like teen?
Gosh.
You're so, like, oh, what was your childhood like? It's like, therapy. It's like, so tell me about your childhood.
Yes. Tell me all the things. You know, so in terms of school, things were easy for me. Like I said, up until about late, I call it junior high, but it's like, you know, eighth grade here and then into high school, 9 through 12. I really struggled. Mm-hmm. my grades, and the constant message that was coming at me wasn't, oh, she doesn't understand the material, with the exception, like, you know, when we got into like algebra 2 and chemistry, I mean, that would have been over my head no matter what. But like, no, thank you. But it wasn't so much that I wasn't understanding, it was that there was a lot more being expected of me and a lot more time management that had to happen, especially into high school when you have sports and activities and socially. I loved being around my friends, and I was super into like, who can I date now? Like, that was all happening at the same time. And so the messages that I kept getting from teachers and my parents were, you just need to apply yourself. Like, you just need to work
that harder, saying, you know? That is universal. You just, any teacher brutal. With any accent can say it. Like, I can just hear some of my teachers, Lucy, love, you've just got to apply yourself. That's how they sound. Really strong was, yeah. And I can hear it with an American. Yes, you just need to apply yourself. Yep.
Yes. I know. It's like nails on a chalkboard, truthfully, right? And and so beyond that, you know, so I learned that I just wasn't working hard enough. I learned that I was in control of this entire situation, and I'm just being lazy. And, you know, or like I said before, it's a character flaw. There's something inherently wrong with me.
Mm-hmm. Or bad parents.
Bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
And so that started really getting very loud for a very long time. It wasn't until my junior year of college where I really started to take a lot more of my core classes for my psychology major. I was super passionate about it. And so those classes came easy to me. Weird. What? You were interested in something? And it was like...
And it worked, and people weren't always criticizing you?
Weird.
That's a lot.
And so I ended up doing really well toward the end of college and into my master's. That went really well as well, because I was really excited about what it was that I was doing and what I was learning. And then I went into the field of work, and that was hard. The expectations were totally different. I think they were beyond what I had the skills for. And these were like, you know, I had the skills to be a counselor, did not necessarily had the executive function skills to be working in a school system that is responsible for all of these children and have all of these stakeholders, the parents, the teachers, the administrators, the school board, all of that. It was a lot. And my work suffered, and things did fall through the cracks, or I made impulsive decisions, or I said or did something that I'm like, oh, I probably shouldn't have said or done that. And it totally impacted, like my livelihood, which was really hard, which is, I think, for some, this is kind of how we end up in the online space or in entrepreneurship, because when we do work for other people, we will make mistakes. And some of those mistakes are easily fixable.
But they're unforgivable. They're seen as...
Some are unforgivable.
Which they're not. And I'm saying air quotes.
No, I know. I see the air quotes.
Like in the corporate world, it's like, you forgot to send that email? Well, disciplinary action. Right. It's like, it's actually okay. Like, I'll just send it later. But
right? Yeah, this actually is not life or death, but okay. So,
acting like we're on Succession. Like, relax. It's not, you know, you're fine. Please.
Yeah. So that's kind of, you know, as I said before, it's that unpacking of those messages, the unshaming of how ADHD exists in me and how it presents and what it's done and what it's responsible for and whatever, you know, it's really uncovering you know, whose voice is that? You know, when I say like, oh, I'm so lazy, or like, whose voice is coming through? Because it's not mine. Like, I didn't.
No, you don't. No.
To say that to myself.
No. Yeah. I had another guest on, and I wish I'd remembered the number she was saying. She's from the States, but she's based in Japan, and she's ADHD. She's an ADHD educator, and she said an ADHDer receives, I can't remember the amount, but like, let's say like thousands of negative comments throughout their life, and that is so damaging. Like, it's so yeah. damaging, because you remember, and it's from everyone. It is from your teachers, your peers, yep. sometimes even parents, random people, and you receive all yep. these negative comments. That is what your head is filled with. You don't decide that overnight. Like, no one is not self-hating, but no one dislikes themselves overnight. It's a result of all of those negative comments right. that we have heard for a lifetime. Like, and it's at really critical ages. Like, you know, when you're in primary school, when you should be told. Right. You're doing an okay job, don't give up, and you're being told that you're like useless. It's really damaging, but I can't remember the amount. It was like an amount, and it can be very traumatic and distressing.
Yeah. Mm. Right. And then, yeah. like you said, it becomes our own voice. You know, mm-hmm. we start to say those things to ourselves, and we don't recognize that it's really not us saying that.
No,
and it's
not
really
at all.
Not true, ultimately, no. you know? No. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's coming from people who should actually know better, and who should be
absolutely
a lot more understanding. So it's a thing. So tell me more about your job as a counselor. So you wrote accommodation letters. What is it like getting accommodations in schools when you're ADHD? How is that?
Well, it will depend on a number School. Of things, but it will. Yeah, it is going to be. School dependent. However, in the US, it is like federal law that accommodations are to be provided, and there's that's like a great. Process for it. So when somebody great. Requests, you know, to hold a meeting or to determine eligibility for their we call it 504 accommodations mm-hmm. here in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so once people kind of start that, the ball rolls, you have certain number of days to respond to folks mm-hmm. and you kind of go through a similar process with special education, although different. Mm-hmm. And depending on the school district, depending on the coordinator, the person who is writing these plans, it can either be like super easy for folks to say yes. Absolutely. You know, sometimes you people will get a letter from the doctor for a kiddo who says, yes, kiddo is ADHD. These are the things that we think that they need. And we can sit and we say, yep, that sounds great. Type that up, send that out, and let's get this party started. Awesome. And then there are other folks who are make it more challenging than it needs to be. Like, I'm of the mindset, and I always have been, that this is documented. This is what the kid needs. Give it to them. I don't care. I don't care if there's a reason we can't do it, like a legitimate reason we can't do something.
Of course.
Then we need to figure out how we can.
Yes.
Like, we need to bring in the resources. We need to bring in the support. We need to do it.
Yes.
So when students that worked with me, it was a very simple, easy process. But
check.
But yeah, it really can depend. I'm hopeful that it is easier now than maybe when I was going through it before, but yeah, it should be a very simple process, especially when it's documented. It's like, okay.
Yeah, you should just have the letter and be able to do the thing, unless it's due to resourcing or logistics or something unreasonable. Because I think, I don't know the specific law, but I think even here in Australia, it's like reasonable requests. Even in a job, if you have a disability, obviously it's reasonable and not, you know, silly. They do have to accommodate you. And as long as you just – and I'm pretty sure even in Australia, you might be mistaken – I don't even think – I don't know what it's like for students. I think as a student you have to provide. But in a job, you can just disclose, let's say I have ADHD. I need extra bags. They have to do it. Like, you don't have to give proof. You just verbalizing it that's enough and they have to accept it, which is a good thing because people think that others would abuse it. I really don't see neurotypicals being smart enough to neurotypicals. But I really don't see neurotypicals like wasting the time and going,
no.
I am going to pretend that I have ADHD so I can get these accommodations.
I don't think that's a thing.
I don't think that's a thing.
It is the smallest percentage that it wouldn't even make a difference. Like,
it's like the healthcare argument of, well, people shouldn't get, you know, healthcare because some people wrought the system. Like, you know, okay, yep, I'm sure there are people who wrought the system. It's probably a small amount compared to all the rich people who wrought the system and who, you know, have a lot of money. It's really a small percentage. And if it means that by having people wrought, but you have children who are getting the accommodations they need rather than no child because of a small percentage.
Right. Yeah.
You get it. So before we finish up, is there anything you want my listeners, people to know about being ADHD, you pearls of wisdom, which you have imparted, but anything to sort of finish this off, something, it doesn't have to be inspirational. I don't want to put people on the spot.
I just think the moment that I realized that I didn't need fixing, I think is the moment that all of these things started to come in or fall into place. You know, where I before, when I thought I needed fixing, I was fighting against so much. But once I accepted that there's nothing wrong with me, right? Like, there's nothing that I need to, like, I'm not broken.
No. Yeah.
I think that's the one thing that I think helped me along my journey, or is still helping me, is to remind myself that you're not broken. You don't need fixing.
Mm.
Yes, you might need supports. Yes, you might need
help.
Some things to help. But you don't need fixing.
And radical self-acceptance, which I used to roll my eyes at, but radical self-acceptance, like, like, everyone else is weird. I'm great. I'm fine. I just need a bit of extra help. But it's true. And people can say it's delulu, but it's like, I know I'm fine. And obviously, it's not easy for everyone to get to that place. A lot of, like, ADHDers don't have the support, but it's so much nicer and easier when you get to that point and that stage. Yeah. It's just really nice. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming onto the pod. It was so lovely talking to you. I'm so glad we met on Threads, and Threads exists, and just getting to do this. So thank you so, so, so much. Where can people find you? Where can they connect with you on Threads and elsewhere? Plug everything.
Honestly, you're probably going to find me on Instagram still, because that's just where I hang. I don't post a lot, but I do. I am regularly in my stories. And I think I have a link on my, I don't even know. This is how, like, much I'm not involved on the actual page of my little, like, bio.
Yeah.
Go check it out. Tell me what it says.
I'll put in the link. I'll do all of that. On Instagram.
You can find me on Instagram. And if I ever stop reading what other people are saying and responding to people on Threads, maybe I'll, like, actually write threads of my own.
Instead of quoting. No, well, thank you so much once again. And I'll see you guys in the next episode.